Well, the fact that it isn't Burrowhead cost me some money, and perhaps so did the officials. I'm Tim Benz. This is the Pittsburgh CityCast, and it's brought to you by BetRivers. Download the app today or go to BetRivers.com. I was concerned about that. After a perfect divisional round, I was less than perfect as related to the AFC and NFC championship games. I had the Bengals on the money line. Obviously, that didn't work out. I had the Eagles covering. Obviously, that did work out. I went with the under on Mahomes passing and the over on Pacheco's rushing, so I split there. Then I split on my sack total bets that I told you about on Mark Madden's podcast. I hit on the Eagles going over on 2.5 sacks. That felt like a layup. It was. Wish I'd bet more there. I missed on the over for the game total. That one burned me because it was at 4 at halftime and I needed to hit 6. It didn't. So that one stuck with me. That meant I split for the day. And you know what they say in gambling, when you split, you lose more than you win because you always lose the juice. So not a profitable weekend after a red-hot run through the divisional round. And as far as the Super Bowl goes, I couldn't jump on the Eagles fast enough. And when I say that, I'm not just turning a phrase. I couldn't jump on the Eagles fast enough. I literally mean that. I didn't jump on them fast enough because at BetRivers, the spread that I saw initially on Sunday night had the Eagles as a 1.5 underdog when the line came out, so I was stunned. I was all about the Eagles beating whoever came out of the AFC. I made up my mind in the first quarter of that game I was going to take the Eagles. I love the Eagles' defensive front against either Cincy or KC's offensive lines, and maybe still a gimpy Patrick Mahomes. So when I saw 1.5 in favor of the Chiefs, I was like, well, what's this all about? And I figured I was missing something, so maybe the line would actually go up. It didn't. What I was missing was missing out on a chance to get the Eagles as a dog. Now, maybe it'll go back up. I don't know. But sure enough, it swung the other way. I missed out. I ended up getting it with the Eagles as 2-point favorites. I can live with that, but certainly an opportunity lost. I'm not happy with myself there. Now, watch. The Eagles will lose by 1 point where I could have bet on them and they covered even if they don't win. Then I'll really be ticked at myself at that point. But yes, in terms of the game, I'm going to watch how often and how frequently and how early the Eagles' defensive front gets to Mahomes. And taking a look at the AFC Championship game, I was thinking the Eagles, I thought they'd eat Burrow alive if they got to play against that Cincy line. I think maybe the Chiefs can hang a little bit better. Maybe Mahomes, when healthy, can move a little bit better. So even though I thought that the Bengals were the better team heading in and I picked them, I realized fast that the Chiefs could be a better matchup in the Super Bowl, and indeed, I think that's what we're getting. We'll get more into the Super Bowl itself next week on the Pittsburgh CityCast. Go to BetRivers.com for all the game props and special offers that they have for the week leading up to the big game between Kansas City and Philadelphia. Now, in terms of the Steelers, an interesting note from tight end Pat Freiermuth. There was a lot of discussion about how simplified the Steelers' offense was in 2022 with rookie quarterback Kenny Pickett running it as opposed to an 18-year vet in Ben Roethlisberger. How vanilla was it? Well, according to Freiermuth, the Steelers' offense this year didn't even include hot routes and hot reads. The second-year tight end made that admission during a recent episode of Roethlisberger's Football and Podcast when he replied to a joking question from Big Ben with a surprisingly revealing X's and O's answer.
How much different was it playing with Kenny than me?
This feels like a trap, man.
I'm just joking.
I tell Kenny this all the time. It's so different because we didn't have Haas.
Yeah.
So like with you, like we have a concept, and like you know how many times do we have a concept and you look at Tay and you just give him a signal and it would be a 12-yard completion. You know what I'm saying? So we didn't have that this year. So like instead of looking at you the whole time, like we were looking at the coverage and it's kind of like okay, like I know what I'm supposed to do. It was kind of almost like too slow at first because you weren't anticipating, like, because with you, like, we could see cover zero and you're giving us a ram or something like that. So that was probably the most different of the difference between the two.
Learning. He'll learn it because I saw a lot of growth from him.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
I thought he really improved a lot throughout the season. I mean, and it showed for the whole offense.
Freiermuth's revelation underscores a complaint that many Steelers fans have had all year about Matt Canada's offense. If Pickett's strongest attributes are allegedly his intelligence, his savvy, his poise, and ability to process defenses, Why was the offense so simplified then for him when it came to potentially getting into better plays, depending on the defensive looks he was facing? That's something that absolutely has to change then in 2023 if they really do think that Pickett is the right guy. If they think that Pickett is the right guy and they think that they made the right pick and they think that part of the reason why that pick was valid is because he's 25 and played 5 years of college football, then babying him as much as they did in the first year wasn't necessary and sure as hell isn't necessary for next season. The Steelers are plus 6,600 to win next year's Super Bowl. I'm even money to light $6,600 on fire before I make that bet. Now, the NFL salary cap number is set. It'll be $224.8 million per team for the upcoming season, so almost $250 million per team on payroll. That's up from $208 million per club this year. It's also a big jump from the $182.5 million ceiling in 2021. That was because of attendance and revenue issues stemming from the coronavirus pandemic. This increase reflects a boost in revenue thanks to new network broadcasting contracts set to begin in 2023. The one-year franchise and transition tag numbers are also known now. ProFootballTalk.com has quarterback as the highest positional hit at $32 million. Teams can place the tags on one player per year to prevent unfettered free agency. However, those tags also allow a player to negotiate with other teams and sign an offer sheet. If the player's current team doesn't match the offer, the new team yields two first-round picks. The Steelers are unlikely to franchise any of their current players. However, for those in Pittsburgh wondering if the Buffalo Bills may franchise Tremaine Edmonds, the linebacker is going to get $20.9 million if that's the case. Edmonds is a potential free agent commodity that many Steelers fans seem to covet. Franchise tags can be applied starting February the 21st. The new year officially begins on March the 15th. And that number for Edmonds is right where everybody was predicting a week ago when we first talked about this. I think it's a long shot, but it's a shot I'd take, especially with that salary cap going up. If it's a little bit of a discount for him and a little bit of a discount for his brother, if they come here together, so be it. But who's to say that the discount doesn't happen in Buffalo, since Edmonds could be like a Jordan Poyer light if Poyer goes somewhere else in free agency for Buffalo, and then they have extra money to spend on Tremaine Edmonds at linebacker. Maybe they can get them both, and maybe it's one-stop shopping for the family in Buffalo as opposed to Pittsburgh. This can be a two-way street too, you know. As for Steelers defensive assistant Brian Flores, he did not get the defensive coordinator job with the Atlanta Falcons, but he's still up for a few other coaching gigs, including as the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. He has some more competition for that post, though, according to Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network. Giants offensive coordinator Mike Kafka is interviewing Tuesday for that same position. Pelissero says that Kafka also is a candidate for the Indianapolis Colts and previously interviewed with the Carolina Panthers and Houston Texans. This past season was his first as a play caller. NFL Network also reporting that Arizona wants to interview Cincinnati Bengals coordinator Lou Anarumo, that he's the defensive coordinator, and offensive coordinator Brian Callahan as well. As for Flores, he's also in the mix for the Minnesota Vikings defensive coordinator job, too, so we'll keep an eye on all that. Hockey now, the Pens are plus 2,700 to win the Stanley Cup, and at this point, I might honestly take that Steelers bet before I take the Penguins one. They are barely clinging to the last playoff spot in the East. The time of this recording, they are 24-25, or 24-16-9, if you want to break out the loser points. A big reason why is that the support group of players that the team opted to retain in free agency just hasn't been good enough. And we'll break down the reasons why in just a second. But back to the standings. Yeah, the Penguins currently in the last Eastern Conference playoff spot, a point in front of the Buffalo Sabres, who are hard charging and young and getting better. Whereas I think the Penguins are going to erode because they're older. And I think the season is going to wear on them. And I think it's a big miss for them to not have more points in their back pocket heading into the second half of the season after the All-Star break. And they're actually already beyond the halfway point if you look overall at the records as we were talking about. But consider some of the numbers associated with the players that the Penguins decided to keep beyond the core group of Malkin, Letang, Rust, and Raquel. They already cost $22.32 million against the salary cap. You got Heinen at $1 million. He's been better lately with two goals in his last three games, but he had just three in the previous 39. Kasperi Kapanen, $3.2 million, Between injury and ineffectiveness, he has 6 goals in 35 games. 4 of them came in the span of a 2-game stretch on December 1st and 3rd against the Knights and Blues. He had a hat trick in that Blues game, as you remember. He scored just once since then. Jeff Carter at $3.1 million. Carter was actually extended in January of 2022 before all the other decisions were made on the more expensive players, which in a way was more quizzical. He has just 1 goal and 1 assist since the calendar flipped to 2023. And Casey DeSmith, $1.8 million. Instead of looking to potentially upgrade at the goalie position, Ron Hextall decided to stick with DeSmith, who has injury issues on his own, much like Tristan Jarry. You need a good backup if Jarry is your starter because Jarry is always hurt. This year, so far, DeSmith, 3.35 goals against, save percentage of .901, the lowest in both categories of his career. And the cap is so tight in Pittsburgh that the likelihood of being able to improve some of these depth slots is slim without getting the other team to retain a ton of salary or take on some more than what would normally be the case unless draft pick compensation is included in a trade. And this may all seem like retrospective second-guessing, except that it was something I forecasted as a problem for the Penguins when they had the opportunity to reconfigure the roster with a lot of cap space back in the summertime. They could have let their veteran free agents walk last summer, and they didn't. That's something that apparently ownership and management and the fan base and Mike Sullivan and Sidney Crosby just didn't have the stomach to witness, and now they have to stomach losses to the San Jose Sharks 6-4 and barely beating the Ducks 4-3 in overtime. So if improving the roster is going to be difficult for the Penguins, what does the team then need to do when play resumes on February the 7th at home against the Avalanche to make things better? Mike Sullivan putting the onus on himself as his club clings to that final playoff spot.
It starts with me. You know, I've got to do a better job coaching these guys and getting it out of them and making sure that the message is being heard. And so we've got to learn through the experiences. We've got to go to work and practice. We've got to watch film. We've got to get better. It starts with the coaches.
Sullivan pointed to volatility and inconsistency within the Penguins' collective game as a reason for the recent staccato stretch they've been going through before the All-Star break, and that was an explanation that Sidney Crosby echoed as well when he was asked after the loss to the Sharks. Here's what Sullivan said exactly.
There's been volatility in our game, and we've got to bring a consistent game every night. We've got to put a game in the ice that gives us the best chance to win, and that's what we talk about with our guys a lot, and we try to show them examples of what that looks like when we're at our best. And we've got to bring it more consistently. And when we do that, we're going to give ourselves a chance to win on most nights. We're not going to win every night, but we're going to give ourselves a chance to win on most nights. I think the volatility in our game has just been, we haven't brought that to the level of consistency that we're capable. And that's where we got to get to. And that's our challenge moving forward.
Now, solving that problem means being proactive and hunting for fixes, as Sullivan suggested, not staying the course and just hoping things will get better. That appeared to be the plan in the offseason roster-wise, and you can see how that's worked out so far. Management's offseason strategy was to find whatever had been missing from this group after 4 straight years without winning a playoff round, and they clearly thought the way to do that was to keep the core together and look within. So far, that plan has yielded very few results. All right, let's get more of the Penguins with Brian Metzer right now, the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. He joins me once a week to talk Pens hockey here in the Pittsburgh CityCast. What's going on with these guys? Are they any good or not?
Who are the Pittsburgh Penguins? Can the real version of them please stand up? Because they've looked like every kind of version of themselves throughout this season, right? I mean, they've looked like the best team in the league. They've looked like the worst team in the league. They've been mediocre. And I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to get a line on what they are. They can score with the best of them sometimes. They let up goals with the best of them a lot of times. And I just feel like this is a very good chance for them to recharge, specifically with some older guys on this roster, Tim, to take advantage of this downtime and get ready for part two of the season.
When part two of the season comes around, what, if any, changes will we see? Because it seems like they're so restricted with the cap, they're not going to be able to make any.
Yeah, that's a big key. I mean, they are right up against it salary cap wise, which is why if they do make any trades, you have to assume it's going to be a hockey trade of some sort where, you know, you move out an underperforming player potentially for another team's underperforming player to just see if a change of scenery can make the difference. Or you do that trade just to open it up and say, we'll give you this guy for some picks or something. But a lot of times no one wants your mediocre guy unless you're willing to help them out too. They're not just going to give you cap space. That's why you see those deals where so often people are like, and I'm just going to throw this name out as an example. We'll take Kasperi Kapanen if you give us a second round pick with him, just to give you a third round in exchange or something like that. So I don't know what they can really do now. They're really up against it. And it's funny though, Tim, because Ron Hextall, I know he was at a Canadian junior hockey all-star game this week when everybody was acting as if he got sucked up by aliens, you know, and they were trying to act like he was not around. And that was kind of a line of questioning and writing for a couple of outlets. But people who were paying attention realized that he didn't just vanish. He had, you know, responsibilities to do. Now, that said, he has been a little bit derelict in duty of not necessarily doing anything to kind of help this team out. I mean, there were, with all these injuries and all these other things, you wonder, you know, are there going to be trades made? I mean, like we just said, you got to find the right suitors, but I think there are deals if you find those cap for cap type players that you can swap.
I keep coming back to the phrase, I understand why they kept the band together. I just want to know why they had to keep all the roadies too.
That's a great way of saying it. And when you look at it now, I mean, there's two albatross contracts on this roster right now, and it's Jeff Carter and Kasperi Kapanen. Carter's was signed last year. Kapanen, they did not have to sign that deal. I'm still not sure why they did. He gave them no reason to believe that this year would be any different than the last couple of seasons. But in doing so, they kind of hamstrung themselves a little bit. I don't know that based on the production that they're getting that they should have brought Danton Heinen back, because you could have used Drew O'Connor or somebody in that role. O'Connor has actually started to develop a little bit here and look pretty darn good lately. And had you just had him filling the spot of those two guys with maybe another guy from Wilkes-Barre Scranton, you'd have a lot more flexibility. So to your point, they definitely kept the roadies along with the band. And I think the band is doing their job. I mean, the big guys maybe still aren't playing the best defensive hockey, but if they score now, it's usually coming from Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang's involved when he's healthy. And the guys playing alongside that trio take care of business. I mean, the wingers in the top six have been fairly productive as of late as well. So it's the bottom six that's a mess, and they don't really have the latitude to bring anybody else in to fix it.
Brian Metzer with us, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. One thing that concerns me, Mets, is I look at them, and they seem like they're holding on for dear life. And if they do manage to qualify for the postseason again, continuing their streak since Crosby's second year, Malkin's first year, that's all well and good. But if they limp into the playoffs and they get the Bruins or the Hurricanes, that's akin to, well, if the Steelers had gotten in and had to go to Buffalo in round one.
Yeah, I mean, and they've proven that they can play with either of those teams. They do come up a goal short normally when they do.
Right.
But and that would be a big-time problem in a playoff matchup, of course. But they are absolutely doomed, too, if they don't have a healthy Tristan Jarry at this point, because that's what really bothers me about this situation, Tim, is if you look back over the last handful of years, you can make a case that goaltending has been, and it's usually the lack thereof of a goalie because of an injury, has ruined the last, you know, 4 to 5 years of the Crosby-Malkin era in which they could have made runs. Because first you had the Matt Murray inability to outduel the Washington Capitals the way Marc-Andre Fleury did in the last cup run. And so he ended up coming in and losing that matchup in 18. Then you had the situation where, you know, Tristan Jarry kind of did what he did against the Islanders and all of that. And I think I skipped a year there already. But then he was injured. Casey DeSmith injured. These guys not available. So you had Louis Domingue. You have Casey DeSmith at times. And they just did not have the bodies available to play net for them come playoff time. And so that's as big a problem as any if you go up against the Bruins or Hurricanes. The way those teams play, the way that they score, if you don't have a goaltender capable of making a big save when you need it, which I don't know that they have right now, and that's not a knock on Casey DeSmith because he can from time to time make some quality saves for them, I think they're dead in the water just right there. So I think coming out of this break, if Jarry's not ready, that's probably as worrisome as anything else.
Yeah, the bubble in Canada was the 1 year I think you were skipping there, but that falls – you could say that falls under the same umbrella too. I mean, they're going up against Carey Price, so maybe it's not the same thing. But, yeah, I get your overall point. And I would also consider DeSmith one of those roadies.
You're right. I thought they would have gone another direction with the backup goaltender. And if you think about it, it was their refusal to play Tristan Jarry in that Montreal series in the bubble that probably was a difference maker, because he looked pretty darn good when they finally put him in there, but it was too little too late, and then they ended up losing the game. So I kind of felt like they may have gone another direction for a backup goaltender. I do think they've upgraded the third spot on the roster, because Dustin Tokarski has quality NHL experience. He had some quality starts over the course of his NHL career with time in Tampa and in Montreal and even with the Sabres, and with a good team in front of him, as he showed when he was playing these couple games for the Penguins recently, he can make some big saves for you. But that's not something you want to even have to think about. You need your top-tier goaltender to be available to you to go into the playoffs. And honestly, if you go back to the 16 and 17 runs, Tim, both of those years, they had goaltending injury scares going into the playoffs. You had Jeff Zatkoff have to kick off the first one for them, Mr. Game One, or whatever they were calling him, when he came in legendary fashion and won that game, only to lose Game Two, which we had him on the network a couple times, Tim, and he makes light of it. He goes, "Let's not talk about that. I'm Mr. Game One." He just wants to remember that. But then you had Matt Murray dealing with injuries, and Fleury had to come in, and that was a luxury that the Penguins had, those two guys. And I don't think a lot of teams have multiple goaltenders at their disposal. They may have three guys that can play, but not play at the level that you need to make a Stanley Cup run. So for me, if you don't have an A number one set, they're in trouble. And I think that's why I would have looked at somebody else to come in and be the backup. I know I work with guys that, I mean, Staggy fights with me all the time saying, you know, he believes in Casey DeSmith. He thinks he can get it done for them. I used to feel that way, you know, in years past, but when he started to be injury prone and then he's had these moments where he doesn't even look like himself, I don't know that I'm a believer. And that's, I feel bad saying it because Casey's a good kid, but I just don't know that they are as good a team with him in goal, even when they're put together the way that we know they can be when everybody's healthy, as they are with Tristan Jarry. I mean, he's proven to be the answer there, and it's just a shame he's unavailable yet again.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. Yeah, Metzer, I don't think you have to argue about believer or not believer in Tristan Jarry. There's nothing to believe or disbelieve about 50 and 53 when you look at his entire body of work over the 5 years since he's been a Penguin. The numbers are what they are.
Yeah.
That's 50 and 53 on a team that's made the playoffs every year.
Yeah, that's what's kind of funny. I mean, and that's what people are going to constantly point to, Tim, is that that's going to be the Achilles heel of this team. And if usually the team that catches lightning in a bottle and finds a way to make a run, it's because their goaltender gets hot at the right time. And the Penguins have not situated themselves to be in position to do that. They have nobody now when Jari's not there to get hot. I was looking at numbers the other night, Tim, and it was funny. When you look at the goaltending stats for just the month of January, you have Jarry with a sub-2 goals against in his three appearances, like a .950 save percentage, and DeSmith was 3.6 or 3.8 in terms of the goals against, save percentage down around .880. That's terrible. I mean, you can't win in this league if your goaltender has a save percentage of .880. And I know he's not getting a lot of support. They're giving up a ton of shots, but that's the NHL, man. You got to make saves. And I've had that fight on postgame as well, because I was pointing out the goal that against the Caps that made it 2-1 and the Penguins had to tie it and then lose in overtime. If you look at that situation, or in the shootout, sorry, if you look at that one, yes, it deflected off Brock McGinn's stick potentially, but he still had to look right at it. It's a save you got to make. Then the last game that they played, there was a goal scored just like that. It may have tipped something in front, but he had to look right at it. You're an NHL goaltender. You got to get your glove on it. You got to get in front of it. And I don't see him doing that enough to give this team a chance to win whenever they're maybe not at their best.
Final couple of topics here for Brian Metz of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. I'll go back to the standings again, Metz. While I feel like the Penguins are potentially going to have to gasp and wheeze down the stretch of the regular season, I look at Buffalo, and that strikes me as a young team that's getting hot and figuring things out. And should have energy as part of a playoff race too.
Oh yeah, you're right. I mean, and in their last 10, they were 6-2-2. They started to heat up at the right time. I mean, I guess it's the right time if you think that they're not going to just go into a hole over the All-Star break here. But I think they started playing some quality hockey. They look more like the team that they were at the start of the season whenever they were opening up all the eyes. Them and the Devils, to be honest, were like the darlings of the National Hockey League there for a minute. But with the scoring ability that they have, their goaltending is starting to round into form. They got those stud blue liners that are all high-round draft picks. It's a team that I think I'd be looking over my shoulder at in a big way. And then the Penguins are, they're just 1 point ahead of them right now. And truth be told, the Islanders, though the Penguins have games in hand, are still right there. They've slumped lately, even though they won two straight going into the break. They were just 3-5-2 in their last 10, but they're just a couple points behind the Pens. And I'm not ready to write off Florida just yet either. The Penguins have games in hand on them, but they showed when they played the Penguins, they are going to go out and score in bunches, and if they get a good goaltending performance, which that night was kind of a gong show all the way around, but with a quality goaltending performance, if Spencer Knight gets himself back healthy or Bobrovsky lives up to his old Vezina hype, I think they can still be a really solid team. But as to your point, Tim, I think Buffalo is the team to watch right now that could kind of make a run at the Penguins and or Washington to take one of those two Metro teams out of the mix in terms of the wild card.
Finally, Mets. It's All-Star week. The All-Star game stinks, doesn't it?
I hate to say it. I know we talked a little bit about it last week, but it's a complete snoozer for me at this point. I know that they were thrilled when they made it to 3-on-3, and I think I'm over like divisional format too. I just don't like that. I wish they could just go back to having a game again. Because even when they do the three games in it, or the two games in a championship, that just kind of bores me. I think it takes away from guys making a run at the MVP because they're not playing quite as much as they did in back in the days when they played a full game. And I just still don't even have ideas for sprucing it up, but I think it's a snoozer. And even the skills competition, which used to be the marquee event in my view that made All-Star Weekend a lot of fun, I've been kind of bored with that as well. They just put too many bells and whistles into it, which I know people eat up. I don't even know how to fix that either, Tim. I'll be watching it, of course, because we do, you know, for our job, but I don't know that I'm near as excited as I once was. It used to be something that I couldn't wait for, and now it's kind of like, boy, I may just wait until the Penguins play on February 7th to get back into hockey mode.
It's almost to the point where you have to start asking yourself, if you're in the NHL league office, if we're working this hard to make it interesting, it's probably not interesting.
Yeah, I mean, even when they were in Vegas, everyone thought it was so cool that they were flipping pucks into the fountain and they were, you know, doing the trick shots there. The guys couldn't even see where the targets were. And then it was hard to see them. And the fact that you had to record the street blackjack early in the day, it wasn't even live and all this stuff. I don't know. The All-Star game shouldn't have cutscenes. I don't know. I was kind of put off by all of that. And people thought I was a jerk because they drank it all in and thought it was the greatest thing. And you're right. If you have to work that hard to make it interesting, it's not that interesting anymore. And I'm not saying do away with it, but you got to find some way to spruce it up. Go back to doing the world teams or the national teams or something, even for a year. What they should do is have some event that they have all of the different formats that they did, have some sort of thing where they maybe the prior year during the draft lottery or something, the winning GM spins a wheel and whatever it lands on for format is what they do for next year's All-Star game. Because at least you have a chance of it being different year to year.
All right, so my thanks to Mets. You can hear Mets on 105.9 The X, the flagship station for Pittsburgh Penguins hockey. Check him out. Intermissions, postgame, Pens Live Weekly as well. And we thank him for joining us as always in the Pittsburgh CityCast. Next week, a full preview of the Super Bowl. That's on the way here in the Pittsburgh CityCast.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.